With 10 movements, 2 soloists, and an orchestra of over 100 players. Olivier Messiaen's Touring Galila Symphony, an epic 20th century masterpiece that the composer said was a song of love, a hymn to joy, time, movement, rhythm, life and death. The BBC Symphony Orchestra and conductor David Robertson took to the stage of London's Barbican Hall, and you can hear it in this weekend's Sunday concert from 2 o'clock.
You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just gone midday. Time now for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Gary Fabian Miller is a highly idiosyncratic artist who has developed his own visual voice through a fascination with light. He passes it through liquid, coloured glass and cut paper. He uses photographic paper and techniques, but often without a camera. The results are very beautiful, often linked to nature, and have, for me at any rate, a Rothko-like purity. Do you see a correlation between your fascination with light and music at all?
Yes. I feel as if music is the closest associated art form to what I do. So I'm interested in the work of other visual artists, but I tend to find that music is the thing which places me in a place that I'm trying to find through my own work.
And is that partially because of the abstraction?
I think it is. I'm interested in making art which is coming from inside my head and finding ways to make visible things which are invisible. And I imagine that composition must be something like that. And so there's something which is special and magical in that. And it's that unknown thing that I'm interested in.
Would you accept my, the generalising kind of description? I'm just trying to give people listening an idea of what it looks like. But that there are quite a lot of pictures of yours that have that sort of Rothko thing where you've taken a colour and the beauty of the colour is complemented by the surrounds. And there is a simplicity and purity about it too.
Yeah, I think very simple things can fill large spaces, and I'm interested in the way a very refined statement can suggest a very large, significant moment. And so bringing together two colours and where they meet, because of the way I'm working with light, they create a third colour. That's the other thing that happens, and then something resonates, and then you're in another place.
I wonder, Gary, if you see a connection between light and its importance to you and the first piece that you've chosen by Perrotin, where light and shade is certainly very important.
I think I'm attracted to the simplicity of the construction of the piece and the way that from very simple building points you can make very large resonating places. And I'm very interested in creating pictures which have a surface which oscillates, appears to move and fluctuates in the way that the sounds in the Perrotin piece build vertically, horizontally, settle, and then rise again. And so within pictures, I'm very interested to create places where the eye can't find a surface and there's not a sharpness which it can locate. So it's being drawn forward and backwards. And through that, there's a sense one loses one's place. You're not sure where you stand, where the edge is, where the surface of the picture stops. And in the music, it's continually shifting in that very powerful way.
And this piece that you refer to, the Beata Visera, and it goes back about 800 years, and that's probably the timelessness of it too that appeals to you.
It is. The way that music was being used, those people were trying to engage with experiences which I'm trying to engage with, so I feel very attracted to the way that across time you find practice which is seeking the same thing that you are.
Mm. And this was written actually for a wonderful building, and architecture is very important from what you've been saying, and the sound of these pieces in that architecture, and this was written for Notre Dame in Paris.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's the way space affects the sound. Scale within pictures is very important. The work I make now has become much larger because one wants it to create the space that you feel more physically you can inhabit. And a recording like this seems to do that.
And it may seem obvious, but I think it's worth saying that, of course, you cannot leave great space between sung sentences if there's no sense of reverberation, because things just die dead and have no life. But in a great acoustic, the echo, if you like, the resonance becomes part of the performance, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And don't you feel that in some of these buildings where these pieces have been sung, that in the silence, all that sound is still there?
It's in the walls.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. And so this great presence that you feel is something to do with all of that human activity, you know, somehow existing still in the silence. It's very powerful.
Thank you.
extraordinary how haunting that single line can be.
Hmm. The space between the sounds is incredibly important. And hearing it now, there seems to be an incredible yearning, seeking this coming across through the voice.
Beata Viscera by Perrottin. We heard the countertenor David James, a member of the Hilliard Ensemble, who were directed by Paul Hillier. Well, we remain in a sacred setting, and I think for a while, Gary Fabian Miller, this was rather important to you, the setting and the service. It's William Byrd, which is another masterpiece of its period, a polyphonic one this time.
Yes, there was a time when I connected very strongly to choral singing within a religious context.
You sang in a choir?
When I was a schoolboy, I chose to do that, which I subsequently wondered why I did. But I felt that something of importance was happening if I chose to sing within a parish church at an early age, and then stopped and wasn't really ever clear why that was. But for a period, I lived in Lincolnshire, becoming part of the community around the cathedral, and attending evensong was an important part of my life. I lived in the country away from the city, and to go into the city and participate in that was an important reason to be there. And for me, the service was about the singing, the sound, and the space. And I remember conversations with the Chancellor, who viewed it as all to do with setting the space for the readings to take place, whereas I viewed the readings as just more abstract sound. So I found this kind of interesting and perplexing, how we could both see the service so differently.
Did you sing the Byrd Mass?
No.
What is it that attracts you to it in particular?
The way I relate to music is I look for music and try to seek it out, and then you find certain pieces of music which are those that you were looking for. And so the Byrd and that period of English composition seems to be a time when, compared with the Perrottin, several hundred years have passed, and there seems to be a comfortableness where they understand the possibilities. I find the Byrd Masses, they seem to set up a kind of a surface and a moving space which is seemed a very optimum point of development of music, but of human beings, and there's a kind of mastery at that time which I feel very close to.
Thank you.
the Agnus Dei from the Mass for Four Voices by William Byrd. We heard the Choir of King's College, Cambridge, conducted by Sir David Wilcox. You have a fascination, I think, with the next artist and the quality of his voice, and it's another countertenor, and in a sense, as far as the modern age is concerned, the first countertenor, Alfred Deller.
Yeah, I think incredible. This was recorded before I was born. So, you know, to reach a certain point in your life when you find a voice like this is remarkable. So you suddenly find something almost like an exotic species who's leading you to another place or suggesting another way we might evolve. And the sound he makes and the yearning within the reaching of the voice is incredibly moving. Quite a lot of this music, I find that the way I listen to it is in my studio, I would put on, say, Alfred Deller, and I wouldn't be working, but I'd be kind of thinking about work. And somehow I'd be placed somewhere where my actions might cause something to happen. And that's one of the ways music is incredibly important to me.
That in this space.
Flow My Tears by John Dowland. Alfred Deller was the countertenor. Desmond Dupre played the lute. I can see, Gary Fabian Miller, that there is a quality of pure light in these voices, that there is a kind of opacity to them, if you like, in the voices you seem to like. But there's also quite a lacrimose, as I said, feeling, a lamenting feeling about a lot of this music. And I don't get that so much from your work, which I find quite uplifting in a way, in that it's a celebration of nature very often, of leaves, for example, and the way light affects them, of landscape even, in terms of the way light travels across it.
But what I'm struck, and obviously when you make choices of music like this, it comes across, is that I enter these landscapes and these places with a kind of melancholy. And what they give to me is they sustain me to continue with my life, but also to try and engage with it in a meaningful way and to make my own work and listen and look at the work of other artists that lifts the spirit and gives strength. So I feel, you know, life is precious and every day is a remarkable experience. And so one wants to rejoice in the richness of that, but every day could be the last day. And so the affirmative, joyful things which exist in pictures I make, somehow I view as a responsibility to offer that as some hopeful action, when on the whole life does seem to have this underlying sadness.
Well, there's one thing that's certain in life, isn't there?
Absolutely.
This purity that I was referring to actually extends to folk music, so it doesn't surprise me that you should be keen on that as well, because done at its best, folk music has that simplicity of purpose. Nobody now will be surprised to hear that we're going to hear the Border Widow's Lament.
Yeah, these are harrowing songs on this particular June Tabor album. You know, many of the songs are almost hard to bear. I had considered choosing a song called The Cruel Mother, which is about a mother killing her two children, which is obviously horrific. But something's happening which is to do with the most profound of sadness. But she sings this with such kind of beauty and understanding. But I decided that was just too tough. So this
you're letting us off the hook.
Yeah, to some extent. But this particular song, it has a kind of a mystery in the way it places you in time and in a kind of an age of chivalry and knights and so on. But there's a use of language in the song which I feel as if I'm close to this place, but I don't really understand why that is.
My love, he built me a bonny bar and clad it all with lily flower. Bonny abode, you ne'er did see, and my true love he built for me. There came a man by middle day. He spied his sport and went away. And brought the king that very night, who broke my bower and slew my knight. He slew my knight to me so dear. He slew my knight and seized his gear. My servants all for life did flee, and left me in extremity. Mm-hmm. sword his shroud, making my moan. I watched his corpse myself alone. I watched his body night and day. No living creature came that way. I took his body on my back, and whiles I walked, and whiles I sat, I digged a grave and laid him in, and happed him with a turf so green. Oh, don't you think my heart was sore as I laid the earth on his yellow. No living man I'll love again, since that my lovely knight is slain. With just one lock of his yellow hair, I'll change my heart forevermore. The
Border Widow's Lament, a traditional song, sung by June Tabor. Hugh Warren was playing the piano. Well, fascinatingly, Gary Fabian-Miller, you're going to bring us sort of up to date, because there is a pop singer. I'm not sure I should use that word, but there is a singer, modern-day singer, who has managed to combine pop music with a kind of almost countertenor-type quality to his voice when he wants to use it.
Yes, Anthony and the Johnsons, the name of his group. But now Anthony has this remarkable voice, which I wonder how much he understands this thing that he has. But he's using it in a brave way. His subject matter is challenging. It's often to do with different genders, transsexual genders. It's to do with the destruction of the earth, ecological disaster. And he brings all of this complexity into popular music, I suppose, with this remarkable voice, which is very challenging for that audience. So I think he's an incredibly brave figure. I've seen him perform once, and it's only one of the best concerts that I've been to.
The heartening thing is that he was very quickly recognised as having a very individual talent. Almost within the first few months, I remember people talking about him and then seeing him get awards.
Yes, and then subsequently, the kind of wider arts world have realised that this is somebody who has huge potential to reach different audiences and create opportunities for him to work with orchestras You know, so it's very exciting, the kind of possibilities he offers. But I like the way he maintains his position.
And this song in particular?
This is from, I think, his second album. But this song I particularly like because he's singing about a fear of some in-between place, between this place that we're living in now and the place we might travel to. And his worst fear is being in this nowhere place. In pictures I make, I'm interested to create a place which one might travel to, but I'm also interested in the way, in some of the pictures I make, where the edges of pictures exist, where colours join. Some kind of sense of somewhere you could slip into seems to exist, which is perhaps some kind of transitory place, and that I find very interesting. So I'm very sympathetic to the preoccupations of this song.
Hope there's someone who'll take care of me when I die. Will I go? Hope there's someone who'll set my heart free, nice to hold when I'm tired. There's a ghost on the horizon when I go to bed. How can I fall asleep at night? How will I raise my head? Oh, I'm scared of the middle place between life and nowhere. I don't want to be the one left in there, left in there. There's a man on the horizon, he should die. Paralyzed in life, and God said I don't want to go to the sea's watershed. Hope this song will take care of me when I die. Will I go?
It really is quite a remarkable sound. And the way he moves between the kind of falsetto side of it and the male voice means that it's also rather heart-wrenching on those little twists.
Yeah, it's very powerful. With that piece, I still don't understand the crescendo which he brings into the piece at the end. I'm slightly perplexed about that, but now I couldn't imagine the piece existing without it.
Well, I think that crescendo is actually a sort of cry of desperation, isn't it? I mean, it's hope there's someone. And when that comes, it's kind of beating the chest in sort of despair, slightly, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. And perhaps it is that, but somehow once we get to that crescendo, then it allows us that dropping end point, which I think is important.
Anthony and the Johnsons, Hope There's Someone, from the album I Am a Bird. Another rather mysterious figure in a way, because Anthony is a little bit mysterious in a rather wonderful way. And this is Anne Briggs.
You almost wonder if she ever lived. She's this person you discover at a certain point if you have an interest in the development of English folk music in the late 1950s, 1960s. And she appears, records very little, and is this kind of enigmatic figure who then reaches a degree of success at the end of that period and then leaves and never really engages with the commercial success of folk music or any of those things, and then is said to have gone to live on an island off the coast of Scotland. And you hear of contemporary singers who have recorded Anne Briggs songs, and they're sent to her, and she passes positive responses to them and so on. So she's like a strange figure somewhere out there who people look to as a touchstone. So I found her music some years ago, and it's incredibly beautiful and pure, the way she sings. And with a lot of these singers, I'm interested in the fact that they have a voice which has been given to them in some way, and then how much they work that voice, or they just accept it and try not to build it in a way other singers would develop their repertoire and their craft. And so with her, you feel this is as it was when she began, and it's as it always will be, and she has accepted it, this wonderful voice. I find it very affecting.
Oh, the snow, it melts the soonest when the winds begin to sing. And the corn, it ripens fastest when the frosts are setting in. And when a young man tells me that me face he'll soon forget, before we part I'd better crown, he'd be fain to follow it yet. Oh, the snow, it melts the soonest when the winds begin to sing. And the swallow skims without a thought as long as it is spring. But when spring blows and winter goes, me lad, and you be fain with all your pride, for to follow me were it cross the stormy main. Oh, the snow, it melts the soonest when the winds begin to sing. And the bee that flew when summer shone, in winter he won't sing. And all the flowers in all the land, so brightly there they be. And the snow, it melts the soonest when my true love's for me. So never say me farewell here, no farewell I'll receive. You can meet me at the stile, you kiss and take your leave. And I'll wait here till the woodcock crows, or the martin takes his leave. Since the snow, it melts the soonest when the winds begin to sing.
There's some quite extraordinary notes in that piece, which you don't expect. It suddenly flattens. And it reminds me of the Northumbrian pipes with this sort of little twiddle. And in fact, it is a Northumbrian folk song, I think that. She was quite influential, wasn't she, on people like Sandy Denny and Maddie Pryor?
Yeah, she was, and she was the partner of Bert Jansch and other key figures. So I love the voice, but I also like the stance that she chose to take and the sense of the outsider. And in that song and in the June Tabor, I'm very attracted to certain lyrics which come through. So in the June Tabor, there are lines like the turf so green and the yellow hair and the snow melts the soonest when the winds begin to sing. I feel incredibly close to these lines, and I think that's part of the attraction. It's specific words which seem to kind of resonate with the life I lead and connect me to something which is an ongoing history.
The snow it melts the soonest was sung by Anne Briggs. There's something about Bach which I can imagine might appeal to you in its sort of completeness and its perfect symmetry.
And the sense of thought. That's something when I've been thinking about Bach, why many artists are attracted to Bach. And there's something on the piece we're going to hear where the way the notes are laid down, I find it incredibly close to the way I think. And so you feel as if you can hear the brain's thinking then being transferred to the playing of the notes. And it's almost like thought made into sound. I find that very, very powerful. I'm very interested in thought and the way we transfer it into images or sounds.
And actually following on that idea, I mean, it's interesting that we're going to hear it on the piano rather than the harpsichord. Is that a conscious decision?
No, this is the piece I first heard. And so this is, you know, I find I have perhaps a stubborn commitment to the first recordings I hear of certain pieces.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it's often occurred to me during this programme that the first recording we hear is a kind of template that fixes in the brain. And so even though we might hear ones later that are technically more polished or more in current style, somehow that one we go back to is the first experience.
Yeah, that's what I find. And it's like an acceptance that that's how it was introduced to me, and that's the version I want to live with. Whereas I imagine if one's a musician, you want to try and engage with all the interpretations and the possibilities that the piece offers. So that must be perplexing, I imagine.
Thank you.
played on the piano, as it was there by Murray Pryor, that opening was almost Brahmsian. It sort of looked several centuries ahead. I mean, it goes back then into a typically Baroque sort of style, but extraordinary how composers like that have that sort of vision.
Mm.
I thought that you'd like to hear this little note that Murray Pryor penned, because it really accords with a lot you've been saying. Bach's genius, he says, is to evoke timeless and true human emotions through the purity and spirituality of his writing, which ultimately stands apart from any specific instrumental environment. That's not far from the emotions you've been expressing about a lot of these pieces.
Yes.
Gary Faber-Miller, we're going to hear, following that saraband from the English Suite No. 2 in A minor, BWV 807 by Bach, a song by Grieg. But I can't say that we're actually going into a kind of Fruhling-like happiness even now.
No, we're not. And so of all the songs on this particular recording, there are two or three which over the years I've returned to, and this is one. And this is an endpoint song. There's a break midway through where the song, it seems to have come to an end, and almost feels to me as if that's almost like the last breath point, and then it starts again and reaches its resolution and end. And the end notes of the piece are incredibly moving, I find.
It's a quest for peace, isn't
yeah,
it? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact it's sung in German, I was unclear what the lyrics were until I chose to find out. And to find out that it is about someone's life ending was, you know, I found that very interesting, you know, because that obviously is what drew me to it. You know, it was the power of the voice, and what they were communicating was the thing which I'm drawn to in much of these records.
Well, there's a great conundrum about music, in a sense, is the satisfaction we get from sadness, and whether that is a kind of cathartic thing for us, that to experience it, in one sense at a distance, but also immediately, is something we all seek.
Yes.
If you think of all the great operatic plots, I mean, very few of them are laugh a minute.
No, that's true. But I think to be human is to try and find other people who can help you through the journey and find meaningful ways to contribute to what life offers you. So this always being conscious of the end being on your shoulder, but always looking forward, I find it's a really important balance.
Thank you.
der reinst Gedanke mein wirst ruhig sein. One day my thought, you will find peace. Music by Grieg, words by Geibel. And sung there by Anne-Sophie von Otter, accompanied by Bengt Forsberg, two very sensitive artists. That was from the Six Songs, Opus 48, by Grieg. Well, thank you very much, Gary Fabian Miller. I think people will approach your pictures with an interesting slant now, having heard your choice of music.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll be surprised.
Well, I think they might be, because there is for me a radiance in your pictures, whereas your music, as you said, for the reasons you said, tends to plumb slightly the torments of the soul.
Yeah, but if you work with light, and my whole life is focused on trying to live with light and understand why it means so much, but the light can only exist if it's surrounded by darkness. Yeah. My pictures only come into the world because they're made in a dark room where I channel light to make these radiant, hopefully affirmative places. But the dark room is a place where I spend many hours away from the light. I take the light into the dark room, which I experience through my walking in the landscape. My practice can only exist because I have to balance the darkness and the light. And I think if you can find the balance, there's a great sense of peace and beauty, which I find in much of this music.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gary Fabian Miller was talking to Michael Barclay, and you might like to know that Gary's latest show, That I Might See, is currently being exhibited at the Hacklebury Gallery in London until December the 17th. Next week, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the American virtuoso jazz organist Joey DiFrancesco, who's appearing at this year's London Jazz Festival.
Today on The Choir, I'm joined by composer Kerry Andrew, who'll be hearing for the very first time the sound of her newest choral creation, only just recorded exclusively for this programme. But will she like it? I've also got music for The Birds and The Bees, and also anthems for Remembrance Sunday. It's a packed programme today at 5 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
And keeping things choral in a couple of minutes, the early music show, Catherine Bott today, exploring the historical and liturgical context of the Lamentations of Jeremiah, with settings of the Lamentations by Bird, Tallis, Brumel, Palestrina and Zelenka. That's the early music show. Just after the 1 o'clock news, which is read now by Vaughan Savage.
Italy's President Giorgio Napolitano has begun talks with political leaders about forming a new government following the resignation of Silvio Berlusconi. The country's longest-serving post-war prime minister stepped down last night as part of a deal to try to restore confidence in the Italian economy. The former European Commissioner, Mario Monti, is expected to succeed him later today. The former Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has warned that any breakup of the single currency would be catastrophic. In an interview for the Andrew Marr Show on BBC One, Mr. Blair said the crisis was the biggest faced by Europe since the European Union was formed. Pro-government demonstrators in Syria have attacked the Saudi Arabian and Qatari embassies in Damascus in response to Syria's suspension from the Arab League. The two countries have led criticism of Syria for failing to end the bloody crackdown on anti-government protests. Rescue teams have called off their search for a man who's been missing since a private plane came down 25 miles off the coast of Guernsey. A woman, believed to be the man's wife, was found floating on a life raft by a Russian merchant ship. She was airlifted to hospital in France. The Queen has laid a wreath at the cenotaph in Whitehall, leading the services to mark Remembrance Sunday. She was joined by political leaders, senior military officers, and veterans' families to remember the men and women who have died while serving their country. A 2-minute silence was observed across the UK and at British military bases around the world. Police in South Africa are treating the death of the former Somerset cricket captain and commentator, Peter Roebuck, as suicide. Mr. Roebuck was found dead at a hotel in Cape Town where he'd been covering Australia's Test series. He was 55. The weather, a warm day with lengthy sunny spells developing in most parts, but staying cloudy and cooler with occasional drizzle in northeast England and eastern Scotland. Cloud returning to many areas overnight. The BBC News and Weather at 2 minutes past one.
And it was read by Vaughan Savage. Well, time now on Radio 3 for today's edition of the Early Music Show with Catherine Bott, which includes contributions from Graham Knowles, who stepped down recently as Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral.
Today's programme is a little bit different. With the help of the Dean of St Paul's Cathedral, Graham Knowles, Rabbi Y.Y. Rubenstein, Cambridge scholar Kim Phillips and actor James Quinn, I'm going to explore the poetry and theology of one of the most desolate books in the Old Testament, Lamentations. Still an integral part of the Jewish faith and a vital element in the Christian liturgy of Holy Week, these sorrowful poems attributed to the prophet Jeremiah have inspired many composers to write breath-catchingly beautiful and mournful music. We're going to discover the history of Lamentations, explore the structure of the original Hebrew texts, and hear them translated into Latin in music spanning four centuries by European composers Brumel, Lassus, Heineken, Palestrina, and Zelenka. Let's begin our lament in England with this set of Lamentations by Thomas Tallis.
Echa Yoshua Badod, Hoir Rabosi Om, Hoyasaka Amano, Rabosi Bagoim Shorosi Bemedim.
How deserted lies the city, once so full of people. How like a widow is she, who once was great among the nations. She who was queen among the provinces has now become a slave. Bitterly she weeps at night, tears are upon her cheeks. Among all her lovers, there is none to comfort her. All her friends have betrayed her. They have become her enemies. After affliction and harsh labor, Judah has gone into exile. She dwells among the nations. She finds no resting place. All who pursue her have overtaken her in the midst of her distress.